Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Hour number two, WEEI Afternoons on a Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock. That's when hour number two starts, and it starts one simple way, not with Ted Johnson, not today. He's off. Starts with our three-point stance. And Stiz is talking, or he would have heard me say, it starts with our three-point stance.
It's the three-point stance.
I'm going to count to three.
Tatum puts up a three. Bam!
Easy as one, two, three.
Pasternak! A hat trick and a 4-3 Boston lead.
Three.
And it is gone! A three-run homer and the game is tied.
On WEEI Afternoons.
Point of order before we continue. Andy, is the count from Sesame Street not pronounced enough for you?
Yeah, I didn't know that that was the count. I actually thought it was another vampire, maybe that Adam Sandler vampire or somebody else.
Okay.
From Hotel Transylvania?
Yeah, I thought that was an imposter.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry to disappoint once again.
No, it was fine. It's fine.
All right, this is the three-point stance. It is 3 o'clock here on WEEI Afternoons. We go around the studio and present an opening take on some of the biggest stories floating around the world of sports and sometimes beyond. Our order, in lieu of having Ted Johnson here today, is Andy Hart and then Nick Fitzy-Stevens and then myself. So each host and then whatever you consider me will have 60 seconds or thereabouts to present their opening take, and then we'll open up the floor for discussion. Yes, Andy?
No, I was just maybe thinking of changing my take to what do I consider Dan Ball?
I wear a lot of hats.
Wow.
Anyways.
This is going off the rails today.
Jack of all trades, master of none. Andy, are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, your 60 seconds starts now.
So as I have said this week, I've started to dig into the prospects, dig into the top prospects throughout maybe the top 10 various positions. I'm still reading a lot of mock drafts, and we're starting to get to mock drafts where a lot of trades are happening, including with your New England Patriots. We'll get to that later in the show. But I've come down to one simple player that if he's available at four, I'm taking him. I will not trade. And others that you may think about or think worthy of such a consideration, I'm not in on. Abdul Carter is the guy. If Abdul Carter is at four, he would probably prevent me from trading down, listening to other opportunities, unless my doors were absolutely blown off. But what does that mean? That means if Travis Hunter is there, I'm still considering a trade. If Ashton Jeanty, Tyler Warren, any of those guys, Will Kambler there, still considering a trade. I think for these Patriots, with this coach and this mindset of the way they're building the team, defense is clearly first priority, and they have a Harold Landry and they have a Milton Williams. I think Abdul Carter might be the best all-around player in the draft. He's in one of the top three or four slots at a position of elite impact. So I'm considering trades. I think trading down should be a consideration for the Patriots. But if Abdul Carter and only Abdul Carter is on the board, make that pick quick and move along.
It's not a terrible spin on things, Andy, but I will look to our friends Doug Kide's piece recently, the roster reset that he published this morning in the Boston Herald. This is what I'm going to lean into as well. Edge, he says, on their take, Landry, White, Jennings, and Chasen are a good start at defensive end. It's a good class of defensive ends. So perhaps another one could or should be available. So
that's
is it
BPA.
The highest?
BPA,
it,
baby.
So you're going BPA with that. Okay.
And that,
okay.
And this time I mean best player available, not bust player available. Ugh, okay. Skip those.
I forgot it has ulterior meanings on our show as well.
That E and the U.
Okay. All right, fellas. Save those takes because we'll get back to this in just a moment.
Okay.
Before that, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, are you ready to present your opening take?
Je suis prêt.
All right. Well, your 60 seconds or whatever that language was starts now.
That was Francais for I am ready. You know what I'm ready for? I'm ready for some football. I'm ready for the draft. I'm ready for the Patriots to sign somebody, for God's sakes. They keep trying to get a wide receiver one. That's probably not likely to happen anytime soon. And I'm looking for them to get a left tackle number one. And our friends once again at the Boston Herald in Doug Kide's roster reset. The Patriots have upgraded at center and right tackle from who was starting last year, but there's still work to be done at tackle. Unless the Patriots sign a veteran tackle like Tyron Smith, they'll need to look to the draft for their future starter. To which I say, ballyhoo, Mr. Kide, and why not both? Yes, you can draft a tackle, maybe in the first round, trade back later into the first round, the second round or the third round, the Membus, the Ursaries, the Trapios. Maybe Will Campbell, maybe also not Velociraptor arms. However, right now, in the short term, why not grab somebody that could be the Morgan Moses of the left side of your line in a guy that we wanted you to sign last year, Tyron Smith, to come in at left tackle? You guys, his grades are almost as good as Morgan Moses at every single thing, from pass blocking, overall, run blocking. He's the best option you'd have. You got the money. Get an insurance policy and 34-year-old Tyron Smith to play left tackle.
I like it. I like it.
I'll get to that later.
Andy doesn't like it. What a shock.
I opened my mouth. That's what happened.
Understood. Well, I will jump in with my three-point stance. I'm going to flip over from football. Surprise, surprise.
Okay. You've got a fan in the booth.
Yeah, somebody's got to be one.
Here comes a hot Revs take.
That's right. No, we'll go Red Sox. As much as I wanted to do hockey, even I didn't watch the Vegas game last night. So I will stick to baseball with opening day.
Well.
No, it did not. Didn't miss much. Your guy, Khuznadinov, didn't do anything yesterday.
You know who missed it?
Huh?
Swayman, apparently.
Yeah. What else is new? All right. So I guess, Stiz, will I start my 60
You are
seconds
on the
now?
Clock now.
Oh, I am. Okay. So my take, we've talked a lot during the course of the last few weeks about Christian Campbell being the opening day second baseman. Now Marcelo Meyer has entered himself into the conversation. If Willier Abreu wasn't available, does Roman Anthony get a shot? As much as I am excited about what those guys are going to be for the Boston Red Sox, I am advocating that none of the three of them make the opening day roster. And there's two reasons for that, and I'll do them quickly. One is simply development. I'd like to see Christian Campbell get more comfortable at second base. If you're going to play Marcelo Meyer at second, I'd like to see him there for more than two games before you make that choice. But I would also like to introduce you to service time manipulation. If the Red Sox choose to send them down to AAA and they keep them down for a certain number of days, they can extend the arbitration period for each player by 1 year. I'm not saying that it's a good practice, but it's a practice that keeps the notoriously cheap Red Sox ownership from not signing one of these players 5, 6, 7 years down the line if they're a superstar. I don't want to see the next Mookie Betts. I don't want to see the next John Lester, Xander Bogaerts not get a contract. So I'm saying take advantage of the rules. Let them develop at their own pace. David Hamilton starts at second, and your prospects should be Woo Sox to start the year.
Fitzy, you'll be happy. You got a meh. I could not hate Dan Ball's three-point stance anymore. So
beautiful.
I hate it, and I hate its ass face.
Oh, whoa.
That's from Waiting for Guffman.
Good Lord. So let's start there.
Let's do it.
Let's let Fitzy and Hart push back on this idiotic take that is no offense to you.
Oh, my gosh.
No. The idiotic part is the
time manipulation.
Service time.
STM, that's supposed to stand for season ticket member.
Shove that up your bum. That's what it should stand for.
Okay.
Because I hate that mentality and idea. I'm okay if you argue to me the first thing you said. Christian Campbell needs some time at second base.
Which he does.
100%.
A little seasoning.
And Marcelo Meyer needs to prove he can, play at the AAA level and stay healthy and do all the things he needs to prove. If you want to tell me Campbell hasn't had a good spring at the plate, he's striking out. Roman Anthony, not quite ready. Or if you want to tell me you want to keep them together, like you have some grand plan of they really are the big three, and this dynamic that Bradfoe has been sort of chronicling on Baseball Isn't Boring, that they live together, their cars, somebody doesn't have a car, they're bumming rides. Like, I love all of that shtick. All of it. But if you tell me, what'd you call them, the cheap-ass Red Sox?
Yes, notoriously cheap Red Sox.
If you're telling me
it's same sentiment.
It is all being done because of some date in May or whenever the heck it is where I can, you know, gain another year on the back end of arbitration. Like, I could not hate that anymore. I thought we were beyond all that. I thought we were now thinking about winning, doing what's in the best interests of the baseball team. And whatever is in the best interest of the baseball team, according to Craig Breslow and Alex Cora, on the field, not on their effing phones or freaking computers or, you know, calculators or,
oh, if we keep them here, we could get another year.
No. Only make baseball moves. I'm done with all those moves that are made in a spreadsheet. So, therefore, I hate that idea. Thank you.
Earlier, you were talking about BPA, best player available, not bust player available.
Yeah.
If the best player available to start the season at second base is Christian Campbell, although I too think he needs a little more time in the oven or a little more love in the marinade, if it's Marcelo Mayer, then put him up. Like, the games that you... Funny thing is, the games that you win or lose in April and May, Andy, crazy enough, they count just as much as the games in July, August, and September. Now, sure, you may know how many more you need to win or not lose to secure a playoff spot, to win a division, get home field, et cetera, et cetera. But they all count the same. So why would you do yourself a disservice with service time manipulation when you can just grab the best player available, put him out in the field right now, and give your team the chance to win as many games possible? I don't care if they're 18, 25, how many years they spent in Portland as the Sea Dogs or the Candlepins or the Woo Sox or whatever, wherever. Put the best team possible, field your best team, and get after it for 162. That's my thought. That's my sentiment. I'm Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and I approve this message.
Okay, before we move on, I'll throw in one more thing that just worries me a little bit.
What, do you want to be battered a little bit more? Beat up a little bit more?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go.
So the one thing that you guys talked about earlier this week that I think is something that maybe concern just is on my radar right now is the fact that Garrett Crochet does not have a contract extension. Mm-hmm. He still has a year or two left in arbitration, and that has not happened.
He'd have 3 years if they had held him back longer in Chicago and didn't play whatever.
Well,
should have manipulated the hell out of that.
So the conversation is going to change if he has a great year. And once again, this Red Sox ownership follows a similar path that they went down with previous superstars of not properly compensating their guys and spending their money once an offseason in a bizarre way. Alex Bregman, so far, has turned out great. Saint Bregman, I'm all in on him. You guys know that. But the Trevor Story and the Masataka Yoshida signings before that,
not good.
Not so much.
No.
So I want to save the Red Sox from the Red Sox for as long as possible by extending the window that we have with these players before I have to have it tested whether or not this team actually believes in spending and going full throttle and all those kind of things. If they say one of them's worthy of the opening day spot, I'm going to root for them all the same. I'm going to be fired up. But there are just elements that bother me about this team and how they handle their young and up-and-coming stars that I have no appetite for seeing any longer.
Let me awaken 180 that for you real quick. Isn't the price only going up? So yeah, you can delay paying them. Aren't you delaying paying them more? Aren't we in a world of inflation, including in baseball, where 1 year a guy got $750 million because he can pitch and hit? A year later, a guy got $750 million because he can hit. The price is going up. The contracts are going up. So in a weird way, I'd like to accelerate their development, because if they're as good as we hope they are and as good as I think the team believes they are, pay them sooner. Get them on the field. And if you want to try to give them one of those early buy some arbitration years,
like the Atlanta Braves that they did with all their guys,
then do that. So I actually think it could benefit both the team and the player and us, the fan, if you got him on the field at Fenway Park sooner rather than later, because you'll pay less for him. Boom.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Fitzy, anything else you want to throw on before we move on?
No, I'm tired of hearing about, honestly, I'm just going to speak from a fan's perspective. I'm tired of hearing about the kids. I want to see the kids. The future needs to be now. Do it now.
Okay. The future is now, and now we move on to the topic that Fitzy brought up about the Patriots and their need for a left tackle versus just other needs that are still needed on this roster, important ones for Drake May. Andy, where do you fall on the remaining items on the to-do list for the Patriots?
So I hate the fact that they've sort of painted themselves into a corner here, boxed themselves in. We talked about that Karen Garigian piece in Mass Live where she was like, yeah, they need a wide receiver, of course. The way they've handled this, they still need a tackle, and you can't get both with one draft pick at number four. And Fitzy, I get where you're coming from, because to me, we've reached desperation phase in the Patriots free agent building. That Mike Vrabel said he wanted to have everything filled so that they could just go into the draft and see what falls into their lap and take the best player available. And I think we saw that yesterday with Stephon Diggs. Suddenly, they were interested in an old, injured, malcontent wide receiver. after avoiding all of those things this offseason. Why? Because they're desperate and the time is running out. It's like they're doing their own three-point stance and they realize the music is picking up and the buzzer is coming. The buzzer's also coming at left tackle. So Tyron Smith, he's out there, and he did play a whole hell of a lot of 10 games last year in a league that plays 17.
Andy, may I ask, though, if I could tell you right now, Tyron Smith will give you 9 healthy games, 10 healthy games to start the season.
Yeah.
He'll play at a serviceable to mid-level plus serviceable type level, okay? Like, he'll be not a great tackle, but a plus-ish level tackle. All the while, you have insert name of Membu, Emery, whoever, the kid from Oregon, drafting and grooming behind him. And then eventually he gets in there and he's learned from Tyron, and Tyron spared him the first half of the season. Isn't that worth $9 million?
Absolutely. It's not that I hate the idea of Tyron Smith. It's I hate that we're here where I have to accept the idea of Tyron Smith. That's how, okay. We're reaching this desperation point where I have to. It's like, yeah, Diggs. Oh, so Diggs will join the team halfway through the year because he's hurt. Tyron Smith will be leaving the team halfway through the year because, well, he doesn't make it through full season.
They can pass by each other out in front of the CVS on Route 1.
It's like,
you're in.
What has happened here? Why do I have to, like, resign myself that these are the best options available, even though it may be true that these are now the best options available? And you're right. Maybe we can do the mentor thing where Diggs is mentoring behind the scenes and Tyron Smith is on the field while mentoring his replacement. The fact that we're here and having to settle for this after I had such high hopes. Remember the days of dreaming for T. Higgins and Ronnie Stanley and then a number one pick who's going to be an instant impact player? And it's like, well, that really fell apart quickly. Now I'm resigned to Tyron Smith for a half a year, Stephon Diggs for a half a year, and whatever the hell falls into their lap at 4.
But I will say that to me is the true definition of bridge year, where you know, like, oh, we can compete. I don't
want a bridge year.
Also, T. Higgins, the way that Cincinnati bamboozled and hoodwinked this dude with that contract.
Getting him in a year.
I was going to say, get ready to put him in a Pats uniform next year, or even maybe reach out to his representation now and say, tell your guy to complain his way out of there. We'll give him an even sweeter deal. But that being said,
did he even read the contract?
I don't know. I told you, I joked that Elvis Dumerville's agent must be out there working deals for these guys because it's bad. But look,
Master P.
Tyron Smith is not the end-all be-all at left tackle. He's a stopgap, and he would also be a veteran mentor for whoever comes in. And also, his name is not Vidarian Lowe, and that's good enough for me to drop the $7 to $10 million to get him in here right now, especially considering that all of his numbers are Morgan Moses adjacent, and if he's good enough to hold down the right side, then Tyron Smith should be good enough to hold down the left.
I just hate the fact that when I look and go, do you know the last time when Tyron Smith played a full season? 2015.
Dear Lord.
It's now 2025.
Holy smokes. Dan Ball wasn't even old enough to drive himself to school.
My kids were like babies back then. Now they're like going to college and dating. It was a long time ago that Tyron Smith was a mainstay left tackle. Anyway, Dan Ball, are we coming at me now?
It is almost time to trend. So I would say let's talk about Abdul Carter and trading and all that kind of stuff when we discuss mock draft results later in our program.
Okay, and on the other side, we're going to talk to a football guy about football things. Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal, will join us in just a few minutes as he does each and every Friday at 3:30. But first, Dan Ball, give me what's trending, including that interesting Bruins score. Dan Ball, take it. WEEI Afternoons, Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy, Stevens. Before we get our guy Mike Giardi on the horn, real quick, Nick. I said in my three-point stance, Abdul Carter would be the one guy that would prevent me from trading. I did need to ask you, though, any concerns with his two red flags? He's got the hairline fracture foot injury, and he beat the hell out of a tow truck driver or something last spring. Either of those concerns?
He did?
Yeah. It can happen, though.
No, listen, Andy.
I mean,
those of us that actually practice things known as restraint, decorum, decency, we don't do things like that.
Okay, so that would bother you. Those are concerns.
It would, actually. That's actually a humongous red flag for me.
Okay, we'll get into that and more with our buddy Mike Giardi, Boston Sports Journal. And I need to apologize to him, but don't respond, Mike, because I need to apologize for not playing your open last week. But we're not missing it this week. It's the best open in the business for a phone hit.
It's time for Mike Giardi.
Stink, stank, and stunk.
The bulging in his disc in his back. The bulging disc in his back.
What do you gain by keeping Bill Belichick around?
I want to see as much Drake May as possible.
Angry Giardi is here.
Wiggy appears to have a bit of a man crush on Cam.
I don't know if you want to take the cheese again.
Mike Giardi, folks, is an angry man.
I'm not pissed today.
I've got you by at least 2 inches.
On Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
Mike Giardi, does that feel better? You got your normal welcome.
It does, and I also like the qualifier. It's the best open in radio for a phone-in call on a Friday at 3:30.
For a guest.
Without a sponsorship, compensation, or dollars.
And slightly graying voice.
Well, all of these things are accurate, yes.
Okay,
no lies detected.
Let's jump right in it. And by the way, you got Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens today. No Ted Johnson. He found out you were going to be on again. He's like, you know what? I need a day, Ken. I need a day. I'm taking the day. I can't deal with Giardi.
I don't blame him.
So bring this all together for me. Stephon Diggs visited the Patriots, a team that supposedly was prioritizing culture this offseason, especially in potential offensive huddle mates and targets for Drake May. Goes out and brings in a guy with a bad knee who's over the age of 30 and has been a bit of a dink in multiple cities. how does it all make sense?
Well, to start with desperation. You have a wide receiver room that is lacking, and you do not want to go into the season with that room and the only ad being Mac Hollins and, say, another rookie who may or may not come in the top five, maybe a second and a third round pick or whatever. Like, they need more bodies, better bodies, and he certainly would qualify, you know, assuming that he's on track to be on the field sometime, I would guess, in October, like, in terms of playing a game again. You know, he was on pace for a 1,000-yard season last year in Houston before the knee went out at the end of October. So you are probably looking at not being ready for training camp or, you know, sort of on that Kendrick Bourne plan because it was sort of a similar time frame from Bourne's injury the year prior. And then realizing you're probably not getting the best player that he's going to be until a year after. But, again, when you look at your room, Andy, I don't know how you cannot at least make that phone call and investigate. And I'll just quickly, as I'm prattling on here, you're talking about some of the off-field stuff. I got to cover him in Buffalo quite a bit when I was at the NFL Network. And he is an interesting character, to say the least, because, well,
good way to put it.
Because, well, look, the locker room mostly loved him, like really, truly loved him. But the coaching staff in the front office, he drove them nuts. And obviously, you remember sort of the end of his time there, the blow up against Cincinnati in the playoff game where he's reading Josh Allen and Joe Brady the riot act on the sidelines and they sort of just tuned him out. Then there's the social media posts, you know, like you don't need an awesome receiver to be a great quarterback. And then he responds, "Are you sure?" You know, like there was all kinds of little passive aggressive stuff with Allen. So I think they have to investigate all that stuff. I mean, the people in Houston will tell you he was awesome for them last year. And that's what I was told. And, you know, he's named captain and all these things. But, okay, a year prior, he was not awesome. And Buffalo said, you know what? We're going to do it without someone who's as good as you because we can't do this with you anymore.
Hey, and Mike, one of the concerns potentially, or so it has seemed, about bringing in Stephon Diggs or someone like Stephon Diggs, anyone who could have an oversized personality or be a unique presence felt, an influence in the locker room, would trace back to this weird thing that has kind of spiraled up the last couple of days. Is Drake May soft or is Drake May too impressionable? So we asked Curran yesterday, we've put out some feelers. It seems like not, but have you ever gotten any intimations that Drake may be a little too soft or impressionable and that's why they wouldn't want to bring in a bad guy at receiver?
No, I think people are just making the leap because they have prioritized character a little bit more this offseason, and I think it makes a lot of sense. They didn't have success with Drake at quarterback last year. You know, they won one game that he played from start to finish. You know, like, they're not a good football team. The roster isn't good. Getting rid of sort of the feeling in there that some guys thought they'd already made it or they had the right to complain when they weren't getting touches when you're like, who are you and what have you done in this league? Like, I think they're trying to minimize that. And I think that's led to people sort of making this leap that, oh, they're protecting the kid. The kid's not tough enough. I don't get that at all. and I never talked to anybody in there or have talked to anybody since the season ended who were like, yeah, he's a little, no, I never got any of that. So I think it's just people making the step because they have been a little bit cautious about who they brought in here during the course of this offseason.
Mike, a question that I've begun to ask in relation to that, Drake May and the offseason, what do you think is potentially more damaging for Drake May and the guy you know and you've seen and interacted with for a year? Would it be potentially more damaging to surround him by some guys of questionable culture, or would it be more damaging to surround him by no talent, no left tackle, no number one target? Which one is more challenging for him to develop through?
I am a huge believer in having character in your football team, and it's one of the reasons why I felt like this team is, it's not the entirety of why they fell flat on their face the last 2.5 seasons or whatever, but I felt like they got away from who they were. You obviously lost, Tom in that equation too, but like you got away from who you were and you had a lot of mercenaries on your football team and nobody really, you're going to follow Devon Godchow. Like that's who they were asking the young players to follow. Devon Godchow only cared about Devon Godchow. Like, and I think there's that holds true for every athlete that kind of has to look at themselves like I'm the business here. It's me. But like there are guys that just understand how to fit in and do the right thing and show younger players the right way to do it. So I prefer to have better guys. And if he's as good as we think he can be, then he can elevate some of these dudes. Josh Allen's far more beyond advanced in his development, but sort of like the same approach. Like you can make a 3 or 2. Like, well, eventually we need that one. Yeah. But like you're good enough that you could probably elevate some of these guys and get them to a better place. And then we'll be ready to take that next step.
Clubhouse leader for handsomest man on the Patriots beat, Mike Giardi from Boston Sports Journal, joining Fitzy and Hart here on the old WEEI afternoon show. Mike, obviously left tackle, insert joke about it here. It's still as pressing a need as wide receiver one. I floated earlier and there seems to be a little traction gaining on the socials from Pat's fan kind. Maybe Tyron Smith, who's still available and had a decent 10 games out of 17 last year for the Jets, could come in and be your veteran mentor / Morgan Moses on the left side. Do you like it, hate it, or something in between?
Yeah, no, that is absolutely, when we got down to before the Cam Robinson signing with Houston and he was sort of looking at the leftover names, it's like, call him up. Offer him a few million dollars more than maybe he's worth at this point in his career and just get him. And you're going to have a viable backup plan, obviously. Like, he hasn't played a full season in a long time, managed 10 games last year. But I'll take that and at least whoever, assuming you're drafting a left tackle, whether you're doing it a 4 or 38 or in the third round, like giving whoever that player is a little bit more leeway to sort of work himself up to NFL speed where he doesn't have to be you're going and doing it right away, because I think as we sort of realize as we're going through this process with the draft guys, there probably isn't necessarily a left tackle that's automatic plug and play like some of the guys that have come out in recent years. So that makes a whole lot of sense to me.
Mike, I said earlier in my 3-point stance that Abdul Carter might be the one guy that if he's there at number 4, he would prevent me from trading even good trades. I think he could be an elite player. I think he's one of the best talents in this draft class, but he has 2 red flags. He's got the foot injury and he's got the off the field assault, whatever the heck that was, thing. Are either of those 2 things concerns if you're Mike Vrabel and the Patriots?
I don't love the second thing at all. And I think that's going to be part of the calculus of, where they put him on their board is talk to all the people that know him, talk to him, get a sense for what that was all about. NFL security gets involved in this stuff as well, looks into things for teams. Like, what happened? And are there other things? Because I think I brought this up to you guys 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, whatever. He's a different dude. There's a personality component to him that when you talk to people that have been around him or have gotten to know him, he's not for everybody. So what is that? I haven't sort of been given, a great idea of what that is, but it's definitely out there. So that's another part of it too. Like, well, what are the things that are making some teams or some people in football who make big decisions say, yeah, just be a little careful with this guy, or you better get to know him first to make sure you're okay with how he's wired. So yeah, I think that's pretty important to kind of get to the bottom of that. And look, if it turns out that Kotrak Driver was challenged him to a fight. You know what I mean? Who knows? Like, I don't know the full story. You could say, okay, whatever. That was just a one-time thing. And, the talent and the guy that we've come to know is way better than that looks on paper.
The tow truck driver walked into his fist? Is that what you're telling me?
Well, you never know. You never know. Could have seen, dollar signs. You don't know.
True. That's true.
Weird. I'm telling you, weird things happen in Happy Valley. It's just in the middle of nowhere, too. But
and it seems like not everybody's happy in Happy Valley.
No, they're trying to get out.
Oddly enough, trust me, if you spent more than a night there, you probably would, too. Mike, so we've had some time. Free agency is now about, honestly, 2 weeks old, and we're that much closer to the draft. I think it's T-minus 4 weeks from yesterday is the first round. So 27 Ooh. Days till the first round of the draft. Have you had any time to fall in love with any other players? Has anyone moved up the old Giardi depth chart? Anyone else you're mocking since we last spoke?
I've talked to you guys about Armand Membu, and I think it, like, I didn't even care about the combine stuff. People started telling me, like, his tape is, like, relatively flawless. Like, go look at it. And, I got some access to some cut-ups, and you start watching and you're going, that dude is, like, incredible mover for a man his size. And, again, he doesn't have the perfect measurables, and he's a right tackle. Like, I don't think you're making him do the Caden Wallace, Chukwuekwuorre for right-to-left switch, but, like, is he an awesome right tackle? He could be. Lane Johnson was picked fourth overall and has been, a stalwart for the Eagles for over a decade. That's Lane's going to the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying Armand's going to the Hall of Fame, but, like, that's the kind of player that, even though it's not necessarily what you would consider a premier position, that I would say, well, I would push back on that a little bit, because I think now their pass rushers are awesome on both sides. So, DeMontre Jacobs got beat by Danielle Hunter on that strip sack when the Patriots thought they were coming back against Houston. Like, he was the right tackle, not the left tackle. You see a lot of those guys now. Like, if I could say to myself, I got right tackle on lockdown for the next 10 years, 12 years, I'd be interested. I think he's a hell of a football player.
Before we let you go, would you be interested in trading Joe Milton? And do you think Joe Milton will be traded, or is this much ado about nothing?
I think that they are trying to drum up as much possible interest in Joe Milton and would like to trade Joe Milton. And I'm not sure I'm necessarily buying some of the rumblings and rumors about, where he's at and, what's he worth. Like, let's put it this way. If someone offered them a four, I think they would take the four and be quite happy and high-five each other in the draft room or wherever they are when that happens, and go out and find the next guy to draft in the sixth round, be it a Riley Leonard type or someone like that, where you say, we'll develop. We look what we just did. We just took Joe Milton, who no one thought could play quarterback, the position of quarterback, and we made him look like he could play the position of quarterback by his 18th week of the season. So, I feel comfortable about my ability to develop the next guy too.
So they don't really like Joe Milton. Is that safe to say? They're not really in love with...
I think it's Drake's team. I don't think anybody wants to deal with that BS. I saw your poll today.
Excuse me?
There on X, and it's
excuse
like,
me?
Dude, like...
Twitter poll, Andy.
Oh. Yes. Twitter poll, and
like
don't
my poll?
Go there as always.
Please?
And I've heard some of the rumblings, and I get it in the comments sometimes, like, keep Joe Milton, trade Drake May. Yeah. I'm like, why? What did you see? He played the 18th game of the season against a team that tanked better than you did, against backups, and yeah, he looked good. I'm not knocking it. He looked like he could play the quarterback position. It's a preseason football game. I'm not like, I can't sometimes wrap my head around that sort of, yeah, he can throw the ball 110 miles an hour. Awesome. He could do that in college, too, and he got drafted in the sixth round for a reason.
Don't forget the backflips. He can do backflips, too.
Well, the backflips are... Look, I like him. It's like me talking to him. I like Joe Milton. I think if they can get a, bump up two rounds from where they picked him last year, that's a massive win.
All right, Mike Giardi, this was a massive win for us. Appreciate you joining us. Great as always. Lots of insight, and keep boning up on all the prospects, because I'm basically using you to bone up on the prospects every week. I'm going to ask you about a couple of them.
I've got mock drafts starting to come next week, so just be ready for them.
Oh, I can't wait.
Do Andy's homework for
us. I don't have access to cut-ups like that little brag that Giardi threw us.
Well, sometimes I can be a big deal.
Wow, Mr. NFL Network.
He did drop an NFL Network on us.
Goodness. All right, Mike.
I don't know why I did, because the hell with them. But yes, okay.
That's a great point. I'm not sure I would be promoting.
You're
already
spitting fire today. This is a good one, Mike. Thank you, buddy.
All right, Mike. We'll talk to you next week.
Good
Thanks,
talk,
Mike.
Fellas.
See ya.
See ya, pal.
Mike Giardi, formerly of the NFL Network, now of Boston Sports Journal.
That might soon be ESPN's NFL Network. Did you see that?
They're going to buy NFL Network?
Yeah. They're proposing to.
They've been trying to get somebody to buy that frickin' thing forever.
They're proposing that ESPN is allegedly proposing a purchase of NFL Network and Red Zone.
So they're sick of baseball, but they're going all in on football. The more of them.
I heard somewhere someone once told me that it was king.
Content is king, and football might be king. Mike Giardi's king for us on Friday afternoons. Great insight there. When we get back here on WEEI Afternoons, we will revisit a couple of his comments because there was a lot to digest from our weekly chat with Mike Giardi. Mike Giardi, just moments ago here on WEEI Afternoons, telling us Drake May is not soft. Whatever the team is doing around him, Drake May is not soft. They're not going to trade Joe Milton because Drake May can't handle having a backup quarterback who does backflips. They're not going to not sign somebody because they're afraid of Drake May being
a
puddle
of goo. What did Ted say again? Backflips and deep throws or something like that?
Oh, yeah. He was all worked up. Strong arm.
Backflips and a big arm?
Yeah, backflips and a big arm. Yeah.
I don't know. He's taking victory laps in our group chats today.
Put that on a shirt, Fitzy.
Oh, I noticed. He likes to take victory laps. We all do. We all like to say, I told you so. It's what we do. And Mike Giardi tells us lots of things. I also found it interesting that he thinks, what did he say, a fourth-round pick for Joe Milton. If they can get a fourth-round pick, move up two spots. I still can't imagine a team falling for that. The old banana in the tailpipe. Like,
yeah. No, but also at the same time, like you say banana in the tailpipe, but to me, just in case he's got it, just in case there's a bit more him to Joe Milton, I'm holding on to him because if I don't know if he's going to get any meaningful reps this year. Like we said, we hope Drake goes 17 strong with more dubs than L's. But good preseason, some reps that convince people like, oh, wow, he really does move well. Ah, he did take to that coaching last year. Ooh, Josh McDaniels has done more of them. His stock can really only go up. I mean, it could also go down. But there's a chance his stock might go up to where next offseason, Andy, a third would not be an irrational asking price.
Absolutely. And Tom in Westfield has been hanging on since Giardi talked about Joe Milton and Drake May trades. Tom, what are your thoughts on a potential Joe Milton trade?
I'd rather keep him, but I'm more wondering what you guys would think May would get in a trade. Say the Patriots wanted to trade May. What would somebody offer for him?
Thanks for the call, Tom. I think you could get the number one pick in the draft for Drake May.
I would say two firsts.
I think you could get definitely the number one pick in this year's draft. I think they would take Drake May over Cam Ward for Tennessee. And Fitzy's right. You probably could get more than that.
Ew, I wouldn't want Cam Ward for Drake May. Get out of here.
No. The number one pick. They're going to take Cam Ward with the number one pick. They'd rather have Drake May. You don't end up with Cam Ward. You end up with the number one pick in the draft, and you can do whatever the hell you want with it. You could end up with Travis Hunter and Abdul Carter with the first and the fourth pick in this year's draft. But that's a dream scenario because the Patriots are not trading Drake May. But the Patriots are going to be active in the draft. They could trade in the draft. And a few mock drafts that have been making the rounds on the internet lately have intriguing trade options. We're going to touch on those coming up here on WEEI Afternoons.